to this computer. So I don't know what ZenTalk number this is, and I know better than to ask you because Sweetie doesn't know
numbers.
Keep track of numbers.
Nobody knows numbers.
Numbers are the best.
Who needs numbers?
I need numbers.
We need the sun and the moon.
And numbers. Sun, moon, numbers. So the way this works for a few of the newer people that we have here is we usually have a piece to start with or questions to start with, but we really encourage this to be interactive. So if you have a comment or a question, you can do a few things. One, you could physically raise your hand so we can see you in the video monitor, or you can type it. There's a chat box. Probably if you move your mouse around a little bit, you'll see a whole row at the bottom of your screen that talks about chat and invite
and
management. So you can do that. Or you can actually find yourself in the video, and there's three dots. And I think if you click on one of those dots, one of the options is raise hand. So that's the deal. So we usually go for about an hour. I do have some questions, but I encourage if anybody has any questions to either type in the chat box or raise their hand or something like that. But first, I want to start with something that we just talked about 10 minutes ago.
You mean about the upcoming Zen Talks?
No.
What?
I told Kathy there's a podcast that we listen to called Dax Shepherd, Armchair Expert,
mm-hmm.
and he's coming to Chicago. And I flippantly said, yeah, I'm mad at Dax. And the reason I'm mad at Dax is because he's been podcasting for less than a year, I think.
7 months? 8 months?
And he has these amazing guests because he's connected. He's married to Kristen Bell.
Well, he's an actor and a director.
I know,
and a
but Kristen Bell is the main
I think Dax would take much exception if he heard you say
he
that.
He has said that Kristen, she's the engine behind it.
Okay.
Both professionally and probably emotionally.
And I don't want to take anything from Kristen, but I just think that sometimes we just got to give individuals their props.
Sweetie, she's Elsa.
I know.
She's Elsa from the Let It Go movie.
Frozen, honey.
Also known as Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, I'm kind of mad at him. And she's like, why? And I said, because he's so popular and his podcast is doing so well. And we've been doing this for almost 8 years and he just started and he gets Brené Brown. And it was jealousy or envy. So then you gave me a real small piece on what good envy versus bad envy.
Correct.
And I'm wondering if you can explain that
sure.
to the rest of our peeps.
So envy is totally normal. We all experience envy or jealousy. There is a little bit of a distinction between the two, but not so much that we need to like hash that out right now. Really, anytime you're feeling envious or jealous of someone, it's because of something that they're doing that you either believe you could do or something that you feel you didn't take, you know, you didn't do whatever you believe you could have done to be experiencing something similar. It's like it's really an internal message. It's not an external message. It's not that person you're jealous of is actually doing something wrong or that they shouldn't get what they need. It's your own internal wiring telling you to look at this. And what I told Todd is that, I can hear you. Okay. What I told Todd is that there's two different kinds of ways to experience that, though, is that if the reason he's envious of Dax is because Todd wants more fame and he wants more money and he wants to be more recognized, that's kind of like an ego kind of jealousy. Like, I want to be famous like this person, which is not something, which I don't want that at all.
Kathy doesn't want any fame. I would like just a little bit of fame.
And I said, but if you are envious of him because he does certain things on the podcast that you think are unique, or he speaks in such a way that you wish you could be that bold, then that's a good envy. That's like an envy that you can follow and you can say, you can learn from it. Like Todd and I have gone to, this was years ago, but when we weren't keynoting together, we keynote together now, but when we weren't doing that, we would go to parent workshops or parent conferences and we would look at the people speaking. And again, this is no disrespect, but we'd be like, that's not very good.
There's a TED Talk in particular. It's a husband and wife.
Yeah.
They seem like wonderful people.
Yeah.
But I'm like, wow, I think that we collectively are more entertaining and more interesting and have a deeper, we have a message that I think is more valuable. But yet they got on the TED stage
yeah.
and we're at our kitchen table.
And so what that did is that kind of envy where we're like, why are those people on stage? And we could be doing that. It propelled us to start doing keynotes and to create our own conference. So it led us in the right direction. But if everything is about money and fame or you want to be known like Dax, that's kind of like an ego stroke because bottom line, if you became as famous as Dax, wherever you go, there you are. You would be the same person.
Yeah, nothing would
with
change.
Fame. It's nothing would change.
The Jim Carrey quote, what is it?
Yeah, I wish everyone could be a millionaire for a day or be famous for a day because they'd realize that's not where it is. It doesn't lie there.
I think he should modify that for like a week because don't you think that first day would be pretty awesome?
How about if they could be that way for 3 days?
No, I think 3 days would still be pretty awesome.
How about a year? 6 months?
I think after a month of being like whatever, a millionaire or filthy rich, I think after a month I'd be like, whatever.
Right.
Anyways.
All right, let's go to the questions.
Here we go. Oh, Kimmy's got a question. I'm going to start here to support my son. And I'm going to see. Kimmy, can I unmute you? Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
What do you got?
So my son he's a very sensitive kid, not to the point like where he feels everything, but just in general, he's a sensitive kid. He's struggled with fears and things like that. He does have empathy for a lot of people. Like he'll feel bad for them and all sorts of things like that. He's in fourth grade now, and I feel like probably over the past 6 months or so, he's starting to like internalize his feelings and doesn't want to talk about them or share them at all. And I've sort of been on this little roller coaster with it. We're trying to support him for who he is while dealing with my own fear of him being like a boy and, you know, like, you know, trying to battle that where I'm not trying to put that on him and just trying to accept him for the kind of person he is and not that he's keeping his feelings because he's a boy. So I'm trying with that. It's just so different for who he is or who he was. And I understand he's changing. And I don't know if my question's about him so much or about me, like how to handle it. But it's just, it gets scary because he gets so upset. Even over really, really small things, which it doesn't bother me if he's upset about them, but he doesn't want to talk about them. Mm-hmm. And then it bottles up. And then the smallest little thing will set him off. And
can you give us an example of what a small thing might be?
Sure. So here's me trying to piece pieces together. I still don't know if it's true. But so I work at his school. I'm a reading specialist. And we had work days on Monday and Tuesday. So he came to school with me Tuesday, and he usually does, and he goes and he just does his own thing. He helps all the teachers. Sometimes he even makes a schedule where he's like, who should I go help now? So he goes off, and his classroom teacher had told him on Friday she wanted him to come and help her set up the room. They're going to do flexible seating. So when we came on Tuesday, she put a little sign out that specifically said, do not come in, Channing. Like, she kind of changed her mind. And so we got really upset about it, but instead of being upset, he kind of like acted defensive and angry, and that wasn't a big thing. But then the next day when they went to school, they wound up playing like tag football, and there was an issue, just a normal issue, but he got so upset, like it scared his teacher with how upset he was, and he refused to talk about it. He wouldn't talk about it all day, and I gave him his space. And I mean, I just feel like I'm trying all these things. I tried writing to him because he doesn't like my face. And like, I know you've talked about that, but he always judges my face. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that since he's little. Like, you just have to sometimes call mommy on it. Like, just say, what is that face? And like, what does it mean? And that you just have to believe me when I tell you. But he never does. He always thinks he's in trouble. And he even told me that's his greatest fear in life is being in trouble. Mm. And so, like at school, anything, like he's never been in trouble. Mm. But so those are, it's like a whole big thing, I guess. But my biggest thing is I want to give him space if he asks for it, which I will tell you, a parenting expert, quote unquote, shamed me for that, told me that was wrong. So I had some issues around that for a little bit. But so I try to give him his space when he asks for it. But I also want, I don't want this to become his new norm where he's like, I'll just bottle it all up to myself. And then eventually, you know, eventually it kind of goes away and he feels like, you know, he's fine, but he's not really, it's mm-hmm. still in there and comes out later. So that's my question.
Okay.
Wow. Great question. All right. I'm going to mute you. I'm going to take a real early whack at it.
Okay. You start because I'm going to get a piece of paper, but I have something too.
First of all, some of this is completely normal, age appropriate. He's in fourth grade.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. So maybe that it's not going to fix it, but just let that take the edge off. It's normal. He's no longer, a young adolescent. He's in fourth grade. He's 9 years old or whatever it is.
He's an emerging adolescent.
He's an emerging adolescent. When does adolescence start?
It's usually around 9.
Okay. So first of all, this is normal. But I carry the same apprehension or anxiety as you do, Kim, which is he's probably taught by our culture, by schoolmates, by coaches, that the only emotion that you're allowed to express is anger. I actually spoke with a bunch of sixth graders last Saturday about how, as human beings, that we're taught about how every emotion, we're human beings. So anger is one emotion, but so is joy, and so is frustration, and so is laughter, and so is compassion, and so is sadness, and that these are all human emotions, and you want to create a safe place for him to do it. The other thing, and I don't know if there's any role models in your house or uncles or something like that, I hope that he has some role models that he could do it. And if you don't have any in your house, maybe you can show him some movies or show him clips of men who show some more of their emotions or some of the non-masculine traits like creativity and art and music and things like that, as opposed to
non-typical, because they are masculine traits.
Correct. Right. Well, you know what I mean.
Sweetie's I do. I'm just wordy.
I know. I showed a picture of Lin-Manuel Miranda in the slideshow that I just did last Saturday. And it's important that these guys see Lin-Manuel singing and dancing on a stage as they see LeBron James dunking a basketball. And as a matter of fact, I have LeBron James doing yoga as well. So it's important that they could see these big tough guys as guys that can breathe and practice yoga. So,
Todd and I were just watching a basketball game last week. Derrick Rose used to be on the Chicago Bulls, and he was kind of our big star. And now Derrick Rose is on
the T-Wolves.
And he had his best game ever last week, and he just sobbed afterwards. And I was like, oh my gosh, I hope boys are watching this. Because they were panning the audience, and there were boys going like this.
Yeah, like this is very
like it was boring. Very confusing to them.
And D Rose he's a very kind of non-emotional, chiseled, and he's been through the ringer. Blown out his knees. He's had
criticism.
He's been surrounded with people that don't act in his best interest. So I feel like it all kind of came to a point when he had this ridiculous game. So so let's get back to Kim.
So one thing, Kimmy, that I that has been helpful to me when I'm talking to my girls about their feelings is remembering kind of how human behavior works for all people, all genders. It doesn't matter. Which is, if people think they're doing something for you, then it becomes more frustrating, or there's more of a combative back and forth about it. What I mean by that is, sometimes as parents, including me, I've had to learn how to do this. When we're asking our kids to talk to us about their feelings, they start to think that they need to do that for us. Like that we are expecting them to give more, be more, speak more. And it becomes this thing like, leave me alone. But all we're really trying to do is give them tools, be a support system. But it can feel, especially like when he says that he doesn't like your face, which, as you know, I totally get, because I've gotten that feedback before too. He's roundabout telling you, it seems like you're disappointed in me. Even if your face wasn't doing that, he already thinks you are. And not because you are ever disappointed in him, and not because you have done anything, you know, overt, but he's somehow feeling that. It could be his own stuff, but he's looking at you and thinking, she wants me to do more, be more than I feel like I can right now. So with the girls, what I've done is switch my language a lot, like been more of an outsider to their experience rather than the person that they need to talk to about their feelings. Like kind of like almost like I'm not the mom and I'm the support system to help them talk to the mom. Like, you know, I'll be like, gosh, what do you think you're going to do? Or yeah, that sounds tough. Or I don't know what to do in that situation. Or kind of instead of like, oh, are you okay? And talk to me, because do you see how then there's a feeling of, oh my God, like
I'm disappointing my mom again.
And she wants too much.
Yeah.
And this is not just about Kim's question, you guys. This is like anything when we're asking our kids. Like, this is just a great question that brings our awareness to how the energy we bring to conversations. When we are nervous about it, which Kim was able to say, this makes me uncomfortable. Things are changing. I'm not sure what to do. Kids just inherently feel that energy. And there's nothing. When I say that, I don't mean like Kim's doing it wrong. What I mean is we take responsibility for that, and we say, how can I shift the way I even approach these difficult subjects? And instead of being like, talk to me, we become a we. You know, it's kind of like, gosh, how are you going to do that? Well, here's what I've done. And we leave the belief that we're going to solve this for them and that we're like the only line of hope. And we show up like side to side with them rather than face to face with them about it. So like my daughter has made kind of a habit this year about coming home and telling me every bad thing that's happened during the day, which is kind of her way of processing. It's fine. But I've gotten better at not, and I think the reason she continues to tell me is because she'll say, and then, you know, Emily pulled so-and-so out of the line and then I went back there with them and then they left and she kind of looks at me and I'm like, ugh, yeah, yeah. And instead of like, well, what'd you do? Or how do you feel? Or how do you feel about that? I just kind of act like more of a friend. And but in a mature friend.
Yeah, like take off the mom knows best.
Right. Or in or the constant teaching.
Yeah.
And just be like, ugh. And then we have kind of, I was just telling Todd about this, some humor about it. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, that's like the time in line with Emily when she yanked you away. Like we put less energy and tension of fear of like, what are they going to do? Or am I doing this wrong? And we show up knowing, and I like what Todd started with, that what your son is going through is normal. And what he needs is someone side by side with him to hold his hand through it, not someone to solve it or to tell him how to do it.
Yeah. It's like in any, it's funny. I'll try to find it. There's this Facebook video. It's like 3 minutes long, but it's just how to deal with somebody who's depressed. And I know that's not what we're talking about here, but we as human beings get very uncomfortable when anybody that we love is struggling through anything.
Any
emotions. So what we want to do is fix it or tell them why or what they can do. And Kim, I've known you long enough to know that you're probably doing this anyways, but just create the space for them to have their experience and try to, you're always going to want to fix things. That's what moms and dads want to do, but balance it out with some capacity just to allow for the feeling to happen. And if, did she say that like he gets angry? I'm going to unmute her real quick.
Wait, before you do that, let me finish one more thing. And this is kind of where Todd's going with this, but you know, to your question about how do I make sure that he's releasing this and how do I play a role in that? Like I'm kind of setting a foundation of being more in a like, you know, side to side, but also normalize his feelings because he's told you the thing that scares me the most is getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. And when you feel anger, sometimes you think you're going to be in trouble for being angry and you don't know how it, and again, this is interesting to talk about with your son because I know a lot of girls this age feel this way. And I don't think we're really that much different. I think all genders do, but I just tend to work with more girls. And there's this fear of if I'm angry, people are disappointed in me. If I have strong feelings, people are disappointed in me. And I'd probably say for boys, they feel like they should be like this all the time. Mm-hmm. So when he has a rage like that, like when he comes home and the teacher says, wow, he was more upset than I've seen him. Instead of tell me what you were feeling or why were you feeling that way, right there he knows that you're worried about it. That there's something where you're like, where he's like, ooh, I shouldn't be doing that. People are disappointed in me. Instead, it's like, you know that anger you had in school this afternoon? Do you know I've had that anger before too? That's a very normal, you know, like you're kind of saying to him without the worry, that feeling of anger, because especially in pre-adolescence, they just need, it's kind of like the pendulum goes really far one way. You know, they have a ton of emotion and we need to first start by letting them know that's okay. And then they start to balance it out. Like, and I can tell you this from having a daughter now who's 15, 13 and 11. Like there's these extreme shifts and a lot of you may understand this. And then things kind of balance out, not because we're amazing teachers, but because their neurobiology and their body figures out how to do that. But while they're feeling those extreme emotions, rage, anger, you're telling them that feeling you have, you are not the only one.
So I'm going to ask him a question. Okay. I just unmuted her. So I think you told me that sometimes he shuts down. Does he also get really angry too? Because I apologize if you already said that, but help
he
me
gets,
with that.
He gets angry.
It's not like hostility anger, like where he's, you know, like has this like deep anger. It's almost like he's angry at himself for wanting to cry. Like he's just holding the cry in. And so he gets like short or, so it's not like anger, but it'll just, you know, he'll be short towards me or somebody else. Or like when someone's trying to help him, Like at school, the one time he lost, like I think the deep fear thing for him with the trouble. Mm-hmm. So he lost his soccer ball and a friend went to help him go find it. And we passed in the hallway and the friend was like, oh, we're just going to find the soccer ball. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't say anything. I could tell that he was upset. And I let it go. And he was so mad at his friend because I think he was about to then start crying because he saw me. And so then he kind of was like, why are you telling her? And so like kind of listening to you guys, it's kind of part of that, like knowing and living, like knowing what to do and living it. I feel like all the examples you're giving, I'm sitting here going, yeah, I do do that. But I think underneath it, I don't fully believe it. So it's like, I'm doing it, but I have just so much of my own fear of like, I have to teach him this and I have to do this and everything's a teachable moment. And so I think it's not landing on him well, which I stole from you, Todd. I do say that to him a lot. Like, how is this landing on you? And so we do use that, but I think maybe my fear is stronger and he's just so scared all the time that he's going to get in trouble for like not crying enough or not, you know what I mean? Not being open with his feelings enough.
Right. Like,
I want him to do that so badly so he's not, you know, a toxic man. And I think he's feeling like he's not doing it right. And that's, I think, what's happening right now, maybe.
So were you going to say something?
Yeah, I have two things. Number one, trust right now in this moment with all of us watching, he is not going to become a toxic man. Mm-hmm. And I say that because if you believe that, then everything you do from this point forward will come from a different place. Because right now, everything you're choosing to do comes from the place, I don't want him to be a toxic man. So everything will be spoiled through that belief system. Mm-hmm. So right now, I'm going to tell you, your son is not going to be a toxic man. Okay, so can you believe me with that? Can you know that? Because if you know that, then everything you do from here on out will just be for the person he is, like you said. So you don't have to worry about that piece. I almost want to take that piece and like throw it out the window. I wish my window was open. And that's not going to happen. So, you know, and I say that, I know everybody's thinking, well, Kathy, you don't know that for sure, whatever. But the only time that will happen is if that's what you're thinking about all the time. Do you see what I mean?
Because what you're describing is, and first of all, it's a wonderful awareness that Kim just had. Like, I'm living it, or no, I know it, but I'm not living it.
Yeah.
First of all, it's a wonderful awareness. Second is, your son probably picks up on energy because he's in fourth grade and he knows that your mom's saying one thing, but I know that she's probably coming from some place of fear on the other. So to Kathy's point, if you can just either throw the fear out or don't let it sit shotgun, put it in the back seat. That is the easiest path to raise this healthy, masculine human being.
And saying to him things like, and I say this to our girls all the time, I already trust that you have what you need, so I'm not worried about that at all. Yeah. What my job is now is just to support you as you use those things. I already know you have what you need. And everybody, I mean, I've, you know, gone through enough research, taught enough people, been with enough people to know that we aren't really teaching our kids with our words. Mm-hmm. We think we have to say all these things and do all these things, but they are evolving side by side with us, but they're learning how to handle things through the way we handle it energetically, not because we gave them a good lecture about something. And I know Kim's not lecturing, but we think it's about these perfect words and it's not. It's about saying to him, I already know you have what you need. And he may say, well, how do you know that? I just know. Mm-hmm. I just know you do. But that doesn't mean you'll always know what to reach for at the right time. And that's what I'm here for. And saying really like quick side things like, if he is, and I know this at school, it wouldn't work very well, but if he's at home and he seems upset and he seems like he's going to cry, just not really engaging that much with him, but saying, you know what, sometimes when I'm feeling like you do, like you don't ask him, you just see how he's feeling. I use the bathroom and go cry. And then I'm done. And then it's out and then I'm good. And then you move on. Do you see, you become like this normal human with your children where you're not this parent who's constantly, I almost did spit in red.
Yeah. Bulbous. They don't know who that is. They don't know what that is, sweetie.
We can tell them later, but they,
it's a gang that I made up in high school. It was just me and my sister. It's called the Spit and Red Cobras. But we only had two members, just me and Shane.
Yeah, so I want to join.
It wasn't a really violent game, let's just say that.
Am I doing that right?
You got to go.
That's better.
Spitting red cobras.
So, Kim, just to finish, like you, the two things that, you know, with all the questions you asked and all the stuff we've said, the two things that are most important is trusting that your son has what he needs. And so when you look at him and you see him sad or pent up, that doesn't equal toxic masculinity. That equals fourth grade and this moment. And you are there not to say, talk about it, get it out, because that comes from fear. It's instead
right.
saying, yes.
That's going to be, he's going to meet that with resistance. If you just freaking chill. And what's funny about this is like with every parenting challenge that we have, it's not about your son and it's not even about what Kimmy's saying. Mm-hmm. It's about how she's being. And to balance that out, like, because the last thing I want for you to get out of this call is like, okay, now I got to start forcing myself to live or believe in a certain way. And then shame attaches itself to that.
Yeah.
That's not it either. It's just, you're aware that this is the deal. Start kind of encompassing the energy of like, this is going to be okay. I'm going to, we're going to handle this together. Mm-hmm. You are safe to express any feeling because he's probably not going to have a hard time with anger.
But it sounds like when she doesn't even need to say the things like the teaching things anymore. He's heard his whole
right.
life about expressing feelings. He knows. So you don't need to do that teaching thing anymore. You just need to give him the, I understand. You got what you need. I'm here when you need it. This is where I go and cry. I see you're frustrated. I get it. I felt the same way. Now you get to be, and I know for people with 9-year-olds, you're like, really? We're supposed to be their friend? It's not about you're no longer the parent. It's that we have to change our role a little bit. We have to be, again, I keep saying side to side because he's got things now he's dealing with his friends, with expectations from, you know, depending on who he feels romantically connected to. And I know you'll say, oh, at 9, they're not thinking about that. They are. These things are coming up in their lives even when they're not talking to us about it. They are, I feel like fourth grade is a huge change for them educationally. There's a lot more expectation with responsibility. Body-wise, that's when puberty begins. Even if you see no hair on his body, puberty has begun. It's begun in his brain. And
he's not a little kid anymore.
No, he's not. He's a kid who's figuring out how to be an adolescent and a young teen. And he now needs his mom to be like, I get you. I trust you. I got your back.
So I want to, this is a similar question from Sandra. I don't think her microphone's working, but she wrote this in and it's similar.
Okay.
She has an 11-year-old daughter that has self-esteem issues. I'm working on correcting my own behavior and showing her how I proactively deal with my own anxiety. Still, when she gets a math problem wrong, she starts really shit-talking herself. She's stupid. She's no good. She feels bad about herself because she has a hard time focusing in class. I'm trying to teach her to step back and be more compassionate with herself, that nobody's perfect and learning involves making mistakes. She does talk with me about it, for which I'm grateful, but what she says is that she's mean to herself every day and she doesn't know how to stop. She then takes it as more of a failure that she can't stop being mean to herself. I'm trying to go through my ex-husband's health plan to find a child psych to work with her depression and anxiety. Yes, it is that serious. I'd welcome your feedback.
Okay, so two things. Number one, every person in the world, all over, everywhere, has a voice in their head that's mean to them. Not everybody speaks about it openly, and so it's very easy for us to point to children and adults who say, I have a voice in my head that's not nice to me, and think, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with them. All of us, if we were willing to be honest, we're meaner to ourselves in our own head than we are to anybody else we talk to or think about. And you may say, oh, no, I'm not. But then sit and just watch your thoughts for a while because we're really hard on ourselves. And some people, I will say as a clinician, just to be, you know, always be thoughtful and on the safe side. Yes, there are people who have a meaner voice. There are gradations of that. Like it's not, there are some people who actually have voices that are like hurt yourself and things that are more extreme. And I get that. And that's something that can be worked with. But first of all, we have to normalize that there is a voice in the head that is not always kind to us. I teach sex education to some fifth graders in the spring, and to every class I go to, I say to them, before we even start talking about sex ed, I say to them, how many of you have a voice in your head that's not very nice to you? And I love fifth graders because they're like still willing to be honest. And every single girl in that class raises their hand. I mean, they often look around first to see who's going to raise their hand. But by the end, everybody's got their hand up. And I say to them, you are normal. You are not alone, and that voice is not who you are. It's just a recycling of either insults you've heard, times you felt not seen, experiences you've had that maybe you haven't been able to talk about. It's just like a running tape in your head. It's not you. And I always feel like even if they don't understand anything that I'm talking about with sex ed, that's probably the most important thing they could hear that day. Because if we all knew that, then we wouldn't be so afraid of that voice and we would understand that we aren't alone. So that's the first thing. And she needs to know that. She needs to know that you also have a voice that can be sometimes not very nice to you. So she doesn't feel like she's, that there's something inherently wrong with her, or that even if she has a diagnosable anxiety disorder or depressive disorder, she's still okay. Mm-hmm. She's still going to be all right. There's such a fear we have about mental wellness. And
especially with our kids.
We all have experiences with mental wellness. All of us. We can have a diagnosable thing, or we can have something that comes and goes. We can have, you know, it can be chronic. It can be once in a lifetime, but we've all had experiences with anxiety and depression and normalizing that. And she may need to see a therapist. She may even need to see a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist is who administers meds. That may be what's best for her. But I want us to kind of take down our this is, you know, it could also just be part of where she is right now in her own brain development. One thing that you can help her with as her parent is that when she's shit-talking herself, like you said, which a lot of kids do, and some are more external processors and some are more internal processors, is reminding her the difference between guilt and shame, which we've talked about a lot on the show.
What is the difference between guilt and shame?
Well, shame is... So let me give an example so I can it can be easily understood. So if we do something wrong... Shame is, I am something wrong. Guilt is, I did something wrong. One is inherent, that there is something inherently wrong with me. That's shame. And guilt is, I made a choice that wasn't great, and I feel bad about that. Shame is, I feel bad about who I am. Guilt is, I feel bad about the choice I made or the mistake I made. So sometimes when our kids are shit-talking themselves and we're just like, everyone makes mistakes, we have to help them define the difference between mistakes and who they are as a person, which is, you are not your mistake. A mistake is something you make. You are not a mistake. And I'm trying to say this a million different ways so you guys can feel it. Like, the most normal part of being a human being is making a mistake. And that's not who you are. It's something that you did, that we all do.
Well, and as a matter of fact, I'm reading this Tim Ferriss book. I think it's called Tribe of Mentors. And it's these people that have escalated to the most successful in whatever vocation they decided to do. And they all say that their failures are by far their best. It's what helped them grow. You don't learn through succeeding as much as you learn through failing, whether that's right or it's wrong. That's how you adjust. Even as parenting, we screw up every day, every week, whatever it is, and then we tweak it, and then we learn, and then we adjust. If things are going perfectly, you don't learn a whole lot.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and I'm trying to remember which one it was so I can offer it to all of you, but it was talking about people who do research for a living, and people who do creative endeavors, which research really is a creative endeavor, and that they approach their work every day knowing that they may dedicate years to something that never comes to fruition. And so instead of them feeling like they're either succeeding or failing, their whole everyday experience is, am I learning? Mm-hmm. Am I learning? And I know that can sound really cliche to a fifth grader or a third grader, but it really is a reframing of what we do every day. Like, I'm writing right now something. I'm writing a book, and every day I spend, I don't know, a couple hours on it. I mean, seriously. And I don't even know if anybody wants it. Do you know what I mean? I'm spending so much time, and the truth is you don't know what's going to happen to it. It may become nothing. I may never publish it. It may get published and it's not, my point is that I have to love the endeavor of writing and not so much worry about the outcome of it. And that I'm just enjoying the process, which Todd knows I do every day. And that's the experience. It's not what it becomes.
So one thing that Sandra asks, he's like, yes, I don't know, but I don't know if she's understanding that, if that's landing in her or not. So the one thing I want you to focus on is, you have an 11, and you say in your email, she does talk with me about it. Mm-hmm. If you have an 11-year-old who's talking with you about her challenges, you are ahead of the game. Throw on top of that, that you, if it's gotten, serious enough to seek out professional help, you're giving her the tools that you need to have. I think we all need coaches or psychologists or psychiatrists or therapists of some sort. I think every single one of us does. The fact that you're willing to give her this support professionally, and the fact that you can have a dialogue with her about this, you're ahead of most people, mm-hmm. I think.
And when Todd says it, that doesn't mean so good, you're fine. It just means see what is working. And then kind of like Kim's question, if you feel highly anxious about this, if you're almost annoyed at her for saying these things, or you feel overwhelmed by her, she knows that. And the things I'm saying to you are less about what to say to her and more about how you're integrating what I'm saying. Like, are you scared to death? Are you like, this is, she's sharing with me and now we can do something about it together and I'm by her side? Or are you feeling out of control? And you don't have to answer that, but it's less about say this to your daughter, do this for your daughter, and more about what you believe and how you're showing up. And I, like Todd said, if there is a therapist, and again, I'm differentiating between psychiatrists, there are some who do psychotherapy, but a lot of psychiatrists only administer meds. And if there is someone that she could talk to, cognitive behavioral therapy, like CBT, the whole thing about cognitive behavioral therapy is it helps them reframe their thoughts. I think we all need it, and that process could be really helpful for her.
Plus, I think we're hardwired to see what's wrong. And this goes to Sandra, who asked this question, and her 11-year-old daughter. I'm guessing that there's a lot of things that are going right mm-hmm. in this 11-year-old's world. So it's just easy for us to focus on the negative. And that doesn't mean you ignore the negative, mm-mm. but I'm sure that there's a lot of things that you could catch that are positive, both about yourself and your family energy system and your daughter's behavior. So don't forget to balance out some of this positive psychology, focusing on the strengths as well as the things that she's struggling with.
And, I was just having a talk with a girlfriend about this the other night because she really wanted to know, do I do this? Do I do this? Do I do this? Do I go this way or this way? And a lot of times I think our brains have made, probably because of our educational system, have made us think that there's some kind of one right answer. And what I always try and help people with is instead of deciding this is what I need to do I do this or this, as if it's a dichotomy, what I always try and do is like widen the field for them so they can see there's a lot of things going on and that you can actually do a little bit over here and a little bit over here and a little bit over here. What I mean by that is you can still go see this psychiatrist or this therapist, and you can also think about your energy. You can also be thoughtful about, again, like you said, you're not sure if the guilt and shame talk has landed. So maybe find that in a book for her or in an article that she can read, because she's 11. She's the same age as our daughter. So she could like look at something maybe in a diagram form. Maybe you give it to her in a different way. Maybe you, when she starts to shit talk herself, say, that's our sign that we're going to go get a big drink of water. And we're going to come back and start again and kind of reframe. And like, there's so many things we can do. It's not one or the other. For a lot of parents, that sounds like more burdensome. But instead of thinking about like that you have to have a perfect answer, be creative. This is where we get to use our creativity. And some days it does not work. Like, I know sometimes you guys listen to me talk and you're like, oh, Kathy, you say the right thing to them all the time. I do not. It's a creative endeavor. It's like sometimes I say something and it totally doesn't land. And I'm like, okay, not going to do that again. And I kind of learn from the way they talk back to me that our relationship is constantly evolving, and that they tell me through their actions, through their annoyance, through their anger, through their frustration, that what I'm saying isn't working. So I have to try a new way. And that is kind of I feel like has become to me the norm. Rather than I'm getting it right all the time, the norm is I'm constantly watching the way that they are acknowledging me. If my children are constantly angry with me, communication isn't working, and I have to do something different because I'm the adult.
During one of our family meetings this summer, I gave them all three of our daughters three different cards. Mm-hmm. And one said hugs, one said listen, mm-hmm. and what did the last one say? Advice?
Advice.
Advice. Because most of the time, us parents, we like to give our kids advice or tell them how to be or whatever. And I gave each one of them, and Skylar is, I think, the only one who used it. And she almost only used the hugs one. But she would.
Are you choking?
I am. But she would give, the idea is like, they can tell us how we can support them instead of us having to mind read it. So I printed out on photo paper,
yep.
hugs, listen, advise, and say, here, give this to, depending on what you need, because sometimes we don't want to hear anything. And we just want to hug. Sometimes we just want to be listened and validated. And sometimes we want some ideas on how to get through a tricky situation with friends. So that's one other idea that we have.
And that, you know, I was telling you how my daughter comes home and tells me everything that's going wrong mm-hmm. with her day. She doesn't need my help.
No.
She's not asking me for help. And believe me, everybody, I'm trying to occasionally, like, I'm like, well, huh? Like, I have all these things to share, but I have to stop myself. And I've shared this with Team Zen before, but over the summer when I was trying to give her more advice than she needed, she would do this, which didn't mean loser. It meant listen to yeah. me. And I started to understand that really what she needed to do was talk and say some things that were kind of uncomfortable to me. I didn't love everything she was saying, because she just needed to say it out loud and have me hear her and witness her without me trying to constantly help her, because I helped her just by being witness to it.
You ready for the next question?
Yes.
What if our child becomes friends with another child whose parents are neo-Nazis?
Ooh.
I live between Switzerland and Germany, and right-wing radicals are increasing in popularity again, just as we are seeing a more explicit showing of white supremacy in the U.S. Do you restrict your child from going to play dates at their house for fear of unwanted influences? Or do you trust that your influence is stronger and allow them to experience different types of people? My girlfriends and I all have toddlers, so they aren't really old enough to have discussions about such topics, and the other child certainly cannot yet regurgitate the views of their parents. It gave me pause because it's not just a question of political view, but of how we treat people with respect, openness, kindness, or not. Thanks for your thoughts. Just a little extra info. My friend who brought up the issue was at the pool recently, and one of the dads there had a very obvious neo-Nazi tattoo. With all of our kids in daycare, where we don't have control over who our kids play with, there is a chance that our child will befriend someone whose parents have those beliefs. Do you say no to play dates, prevent contact as much as possible, invite the child to your house instead of the other way around? I'm going to start.
Okay.
We have a wonderful community in Elmhurst, and our kids have had a whole bunch of different types of friends. But it's fair to say, and some friends and parents of friends that we love and we adore, and others that we just don't connect with. But it's fair to say that none of the people that we didn't connect with were neo-Nazis or based their belief system on hating people because of the color of their skin. So
even though Todd and I were driving down York Street in Elmhurst the other day, which is kind of our main street, and there was a car in front of us that had like 5 InfoWars stickers on the back. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who know what InfoWars is, it's Alex Jones, and he's a conspiracy theorist, and he said that Sandy Hook was not real, and he got his everything taken off of Facebook, and because of how,
like, he's the only one that has ever gotten anything yeah. taken away from Facebook. So it's safe to say that
that's around.
So what we would do is, when our daughters wanted to have a play date with somebody that we just didn't feel had the same values as we did, we never said no, but we said, you know what, we're doing something that day. And you could say, well, that's very misleading or misguiding. I'm okay with being a little bit, I don't know what the word is, devious.
Well, no, and we didn't always say you couldn't do it. Like, I remember we modified it where they could meet at the park. We were around.
And I think we more did it the other way. Like, the parents and the kids that we really loved, like, we would, like, initiate stuff. We didn't have to do much
moving away.
But we made it a little bit more challenging for our kids to be around a certain person or group or something like that. So my answer to this, you can't do anything about daycare unless you really want to pull the kid out of daycare. So there's nothing you do about that, but I would not expose my kid to a family that has belief system and puts paint on their body saying that they're a neo-Nazi.
And I think that it's that middle ground where I agree with you. I was telling Todd that one of my favorite things that Brené Brown has said that I follow myself is that I can have a conversation with anybody about anything, meaning I am willing to listen to you and I'm willing to hear you and I'm willing to be quiet and hear and even hear about your background and how you came to this belief system until you dehumanize me. Mm-hmm. If you dehumanize me, then we can't have this conversation. Why that's important is because it kind of helps you find your own boundaries with where the respect, and it doesn't mean then if I'm dehumanized that I dehumanize them back. It just means that that
yourself.
Conversation is no longer going to, you know, if someone has already decided women are dumb and they're misogynistic and they already have a belief system that is dehumanizing me, then that's almost that's not a conversation I'm going to, you know, put my energy into. If they have different political beliefs or different policy beliefs, or I'm totally open to that. Like, tell me, explain to me, help me learn. Like, I love my friends who have different political affiliation, who enlighten me, but also have respect for where I am. That's called civil conversation. Now, I know I'm getting off track to what you're asking, but I guess that's the line is like, we've had some experiences, like Todd said, where our children, you know, some people that were, you know, in the neighborhood who they would say, can I go over to their house? And we'd say, you know what, you can't go over to their house, but you could meet them at the park.
And you know, the park happened to be across the street. So we keep an eye on them.
Right. And, you know, that's where we are right now. If it be, it's, you know, the neo-Nazi thing is pretty extreme. And I think you and I would have big discussions about that. But one of the things is Todd and I are members of Moms Demand Action. And I hope many of you are too, if you believe there should be some common sense gun laws. And they've taught me a lot about how to discuss common sense gun laws and not be and continue a conversation to keep it civil. And one of the things that they are recommending for all parents and that they hope it becomes most normal, as just like asking if your kid has allergies, is to start asking when your kid goes to someone's house if they have guns in the house. And if you do have guns in the house, are they locked up? Mm-hmm. That should become a common question, just like, does your kid have any allergies?
Right.
You know, is there, can we feed them this? Can we feed them that? And that I have to be honest, my kids are an age now. I don't ask that question the way I would have maybe 5 years ago. But my friend Diane, who runs our group, our Moms Demand Action group, she's done that a time or two. And she says it feels really empowering.
Sweetie, Kimmy asks, do you explain why they can't go over to their house? Well, in the neo-Nazi idea, the kid's four. They're in childcare. So they're, what did she say? They're toddlers. So no,
they don't really need
one. No, you don't want to do that. I would try to just kind of go around that.
Yeah, that's where, you know, Todd was using the word devious before. I don't think we've ever been devious. And again, I'm a word person. I know Todd's not, but that sounds so negative, like we're trying to hurt someone. We have been elusive about things like, you know, you guys can meet at the park. You know, we're just not going to do house things today. Kind of like, it's not like when kids are at a certain age, you don't want to overburden them with too much of that information and be like, listen, this is how we really feel. Now, as my kids are older, we can have these discussions, but really what happens now is my kids, especially my 15-year-old, she has to make these decisions for herself. Like, she's got a lot of freedom now. And so she has to figure out where she wants to be. If she was going to a neo-Nazi party, I still have some room to say something about that. But my point is that she's going into an adult world now and she has to figure that out. In answer to your question, they're all so hypothetical because every single one of them is going to have different dimension to it. Like where it's at, if they're a really good friend, do you know the parents? Like someone with just conflicting beliefs, I'd have no problem with them going there. I have no problem. But neo-Nazism is dehumanization.
You know, it's safe to say Kathy and I typically vote Democrat, but if there's whatever, somebody who's Republican,
we don't care.
I don't care.
Like we're that's not a
we're
problem.
Human beings.
Yeah.
So there's, this is like the nuanced thing.
Yeah.
Like if you're a neo-Nazi, I'm sorry, it's going to be really hard for me to put my kid in a position to be around your kid. That's just the way it is.
But it doesn't mean I use the dehumanization thing because we don't use tools of oppression when someone is using tools of oppression, like putting on their skin, that they are saying, I hate certain populations and I have a belief system and I'm going to wear it on me. We don't have to come back with a tool of oppression like that. I believe we role model. I know that it's been a long time and some people don't agree with it and think we should go a different direction, but I'm a Michelle Obama person. We go high. And that means we have respect for ourselves and we make choices, for our family that's best for us. And we respect everyone else in the process, but we don't have to accommodate it. We can still speak up about it. So there is no easy answer to this question because it is kind of extreme. It's like not all of us are put in this position, but I would definitely, you can teach tolerance without putting your children in harm's way with hatred. Like there's like this place in between where you would almost have to give me the exact scenario and then we could work it out and figure out how to do it right in that moment.
Yeah. So it's 12:52. I don't know if we want to get into another question or not.
Is it short?
What do we have here?
Does anybody else have one?
I asked. Everybody's being quiet today except for Kimmy.
Well, there's lots of people writing.
I know writing. I love the writing.
Oh, here's one.
Kim says, I got on the call late, but I wanted your view on her 15-year-old being driven by her 17-year-old friends. It has come up and I said we need a discussion. Wow.
We're there too.
Yeah, that's right where we are. Mm-hmm. It just started happening.
Yeah.
JC has a friend. I don't know.
Vivian.
Mm-hmm. She's driving her around. And there was no discussion. Like, oh my God. Like it isn't.
Oh no, I had discussion with her.
Before the first night?
Absolutely.
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, because I just assumed it was Vivian's mom coming to pick up JC and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden it was Vivian. What'd you say?
So these were the things that JC and I went through, and it wasn't like, sit down, I have a lecture for you. She told me that Vivian got her license, and she said, I forgot where they were going that night, but they were going somewhere where I was like, whoa, was it a party? Like there was something, there was all these parts of it that I was like, okay, here's the things I want you to know. Number one, as far as following the laws in the car, I'm like, when your friends are driving, it doesn't matter. You still have to be thoughtful because I know you're going to want to crank up the music because I always want to crank up the music too. But Vivian is a new driver, so be thoughtful about that. Almost kind of like giving Vivian the respect instead of like being like, JC, don't do this. And she's like, yeah, I got it. And again, I can't guarantee that's not happening, but I wanted her to be conscious of you need to be thoughtful of the driver. I also told her that if she's ever in a situation where anyone is drinking or where she's drinking, that
what if they're smoking weed, sweetie?
Whatever, any kind of, and I said, your dad and I are always available to pick you up. It's why we have a phone.
Without ramifications.
Yeah, we're always here to pick you up 2 a.m. She knows I go to bed at 10. I'm a wimp. Call me at 2. I don't care. And I told her by January we'd put Uber on her phone so she could Uber home if she needed to. You may think like, oh, that gives them a pass. That's permissiveness. The first thing with my daughters is safety. And if they are in a position where they're feeling pressure socially to make a quick choice, I want them to have an option. I want them to not be stuck somewhere. I want them to have Uber as an option, and I want them to know we're an option. And then we'll deal with what that means after. Mm-hmm. Where I'm taking my daughter now is just know this is an option. It's not as if she would Uber. I mean, Ubering home would be fine, but if she called me in the middle of the night because someone else had been drinking, that's one thing. If she had been drinking or smoking or something, obviously we'd have a discussion about it after. But first things first, get you home. So, and I told her that in a very light way, not like in a...
How much time, literally, was it a 2-minute talk? Was it a 30-minute talk?
It was like 3 different talks. Like, it was like, here's this information, here's this information, here's this information. I didn't sit down and say, sit down in front of me, here's a talk. But these were things when she told me Viv could drive and had her license. And also, there's a few guys in her life that have their license
yes,
now, too.
Yes, yes.
But there's a reality to that we can't say you can't get in. I mean, I guess we could say you can't get in the car with your friends, but I don't know how well that'll work. What if instead we said, I trust your... that you know what's best for you. I trust that you understand when something is safe or not. And if you're ever unsure, I'm available. I kind of feel like in the long run, that's better than a lot of rules and restrictions because I feel like they'll possibly do it anyway. I don't, my Aunt Peg is on this call and she's my mom's sister. And I remember Peg when
That's how aunts work.
And I remember when I got my license and my mom told me I could only drive around the block and I couldn't go downtown. And I was like, what? And she was like, just drive around the block. That's as far as you could go. And that made no sense to me. I had my license. And so I was like, can I go up to Kelly's house, which was like 2 or 3 blocks away? And she was like, no. I don't know if you remember where Kelly lives, Peg, but she was on Pooler.
Everybody knows where Kelly lives.
Just let me have a conversation with my aunt for a second. She lived 3 blocks up. And it was crazy to me. And I could tell she was afraid or that she didn't trust me. And I felt kind of like, I need you to trust me because I need to know you trust me as a new driver. And again, we figured it out. I think I went to McDonald's the next week and that was our big breakthrough. But I think it's the same way with our kids, is we just have to give them as much information and give them outs. The other out we have is that if my daughter feels that she's unsafe or that she wants me to tell her she has to come home, she texts me an emoji of a rabbit. And so she'll say, hey, can I stay? And then she'll text a rabbit.
So why doesn't she just say, I'm coming home?
Because her friends are watching what she's typing.
Oh.
And so I know then that I'll say, nope, you can't stay. You got to come home. So we have a lot of like, again, I'm on
devious.
Her team.
Devious.
Not devious.
Devious.
Not devious.
Yes.
It's called, devious. Remember, release.
Lying.
Release
lying
valves.
To the world.
Buttons, support systems, like, you know, and I don't have any guarantees, but none of us do. Like, I want to be like, I want to keep my kids like wrapped in
bubble wrap
and never send them anywhere. I mean, my goodness, we just had another mass shooting the other day. Like, everything is so crazy, but we also have to teach them how to live. Yep. We have to teach
them.
Not
doing them any favors, wrapping them in bubble wrap.
I know, like last night, JC went to a concert with her friend Eleni, and you know, after a mass shooting at a bar, you're like, oh my God, but she has to live. She has to go. And she went and she had a ball and she came home at like 10 and she was so happy. And that's living. And if I would have been like, you can't go because I'm afraid. Like, what good is that going to do?
So quick story. Last night, Kathy and I were watching a show called Homecoming with Julia Roberts.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I was just wondering where JC was. So we have the fine friends on the phone.
Lindsay's watching Homecoming too. She gave
us a nod. Oh, she is? Oh, nice. So we have a really good, awesome, amazing, beautiful, mature 15-year-old daughter. But I want to know how late I was going to have to stay up because one of us always wants to be awake when she comes home. And it was a school night. It's kind of a weird night.
It was weird, yeah.
So I did find friends and I noticed that her location was in a cemetery or something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, is it possible that we got duped, that there was no concert, that she went to a cemetery with some boys or whatever. And I refreshed it for like 2 minutes and it stayed at the cemetery. I'm like, oh my God, I think this might be her real first bust, parents busting kids. And it turned out that the GPS was just a little messed up. She was driving home on North Avenue right by a cemetery, and then it caught up and she showed up like 2 minutes later.
And so Todd told me this story. He's like, after he figured out she was really on her way home, I go, well, I've been watching her Snapchat and she's been at the concert all night.
Yeah,
so
I don't have Snapchat.
And I wasn't watching her Snapchat to be like, are you at the concert? It was just, I checked Snapchat. Like, you know, I have like 5 friends.
I don't do Snapchat.
My aunt.
I don't do Insta. I only do Facebook.
And I look at Insta, Snap, and Facebook. I don't look at LinkedIn or Twitter.
It's too much for me. A few announcements. We have a sex talk on Wednesday. Yeah. We did it at the Elmhurst Public Library last Monday. It went well. It was 2 hours. This sex talk is only going to be an hour. It's free to any, we're doing it virtually. So it's going to be like a Zen talk. Virtual Zen talk that we're doing right here. There's going to be some Team Zen members on there. And there's going to be some outsiders. So be nice to the outsiders.
Outsiders.
And those outsiders are suckers because they got to pay 20.
Suckers.
20 bucks. Suckers got to pay 20, but Team Zen people don't. So if you're interested and you haven't yet signed up for it, just log into your members page in the account and go to events and say, I want to do it. And it should process automatically to be zero. So that's the one thing.
And if you can't make it, you're still going to get the podcast and the, we will send you the podcast just like we do these.
And we might send a PowerPoint before, during, or after. We don't know what we're going to do. Cause we had Kathy did this really good PowerPoint for the library. And it was really a lot of information when we're not sure how we're going to squeeze that into 60 minutes, but we'll figure it out. I don't know when our next Zen Talk is going to be because two Fridays from now is the day after Thanksgiving. So we're obviously not going to do it then.
The 29th, right?
Right. So we'll figure out another day. It'll either be before or after. I don't know. But the homework assignment between now and the next Zen Talk is on Thanksgiving. Everybody has to rent Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and watch it with your family because it's one of the best movies ever. Right, sweetie?
No, yes. It stresses me
out. No, it's a good movie. Del Griffith and Neil Page.
Oh, I know who's we've watched.
John Candy and Steve
times.
Martin. It's just a heartwarming, funny.
It's not heartwarming until the very end. You have to work so damn hard with that movie. You have to like deal with all the discomfort for that last 5 minutes.
See, Kimmy says it's not her favorite. So Kimmy's having a bad day because she's wrong.
No, Kimmy.
Right. She's wrong.
You and
there.
Me. We're, I'm fist bumping.
So everybody's got to watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's a Thanksgiving tradition.
We do that at Todd's house or Todd's brother's house in Seattle.
That's Sean Emerson's a big fan.
Of course.
So bada boom, bada bang.
You know what? It's fine. I love Steve Martin. There's a few scenes that we wait to see, but it is stressful because things do not go right.
Coming from the person who leaves in the bottom of the ninth because
yes.
the good part of the game is about to reveal itself.
Yes.
And she leaves the room.
Just tell me what happened.
Were you watching when the Cubs won the World Series?
I was up in a ball in my bed. Look at Peg's like,
Peggy's
me
nodding,
too.
Yes.
I was in a ball.
So last but not least, I just want to give my heartfelt thanks to all of you. Team Zen is kind of the engine that keeps Zen parenting going. We love our listeners for the podcast, but I would be lying if I didn't say I had a deeper love for all of you.
Todd's going to say, I love you more. He's like telling his children that he loves one the best.
I know. What is that line from Tangled? I love you more.
I love you most.
That's what the mom says.
We love Tangled around this house.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You guys keep trucking.
Keep trucking.
Love you all. Take care.
And hopefully see you next Wednesday
for
the talk. And
noon.
If not, we'll send it to you.
And yeah, just sign up for free and you'll get the virtual call. But you got to sign up so we know who to send it to.
Okay. Love you.
Love you guys. Adios.
I love you most.